Would anyone like to ask something or share something? Konark, why don't you have a seat? Difficult to sit on the floor with your knee. Okay. The biggest paradox is we all called individuals, and the word individual itself is individual. In our own individuality, we are dual. That is the whole secret, hidden in plain sight. The person who's not on the spiritual path, so to speak, considers that they are suffering their way through life and life situations. Sorry for my voice, I've recovered from a viral. This person who is conscious that I am on a journey of discovery, that person realizes that suffering in any form is for my growth. The unaware person is lost in their suffering, blaming, condemning others as well as themselves. The person who is aware is also suffering, but is aware. What am I being taught through this challenge, through this suffering, through this relationship? What is it trying to reveal to me? You see, because if I have a problem with someone because I don't like them and the way they talk to me and behave with me, that is all fine on a certain level. But whatever feelings are arising within me about what they are saying and doing are my feelings. They have just given me a chance to allow them to come up. So when I realize why am I taking offense with a certain person in my life, it's really not about that person. It is about what is inside here that finds something offensive. So this becomes a recalibration. When I'm no longer obsessing about the troublemakers in my life, it is about what is here. This must be understood because life is short. Are we going to carry our grudges to our grave? Are we going to try and change people till our last breath? You should not be this way. You should be this way, this other way, which I find if you are, you will be more likable, amiable, you'll be a more sensitive person. So, am I playing God with the characters in this living dream of life? I would call that arrogance. Unintentional arrogance born out of ignorance. The need to want to change people. The compulsive need to prove to others that I am right. You might have someone in your life whom you are itching to give back to. Just waiting for that next moment when they say something to you so you can give it back to them. That person is your teacher. That person is your teacher. Shocking as it may sound. Because when you accept the hand of God above everyone, everyone being created by the same power, everyone having had child consciousness when they were children, pure being. Got conditioned a certain way through life circumstances which made them who they are. But then I mistook them to be the doers of their actions, the doers of their conditioning, the doers of their past. And I condemn them with judgment. I don't like you, or I don't like this part of you. But when I see this hand of God above everyone, it allows me the opportunity not to react to an individual, but rather respond to them. Otherwise, all my life, I will be reacting, especially with that same person in my life who's most likely a part of my family, who I have to engage with all the time. Could be parent, child, spouse, or very close friend, or someone at work. And so I have all my swords lined up next to me. Which one am I going to use today? And this is the battle of life. Imagine wanting to battle all your life till your last breath. You are going to be exhausted. Battling with people, battling with situations as they present themselves, and battling with myself. So at the end of life, on your last day, you will say to yourself, I was very good at fighting battles. And therefore, Since I know best how to fight battles, may it continue to be battles manifest for me to fight. So simple. In such cases, the spiritual concepts of sannidhi and sharanagati don't really get tapped into. An acceptance of the divine will and being in the presence of consciousness. We can feel the divine will right here, right now, in this space in which we all have manifest. Right now, in your own consciousness, you are seeing certain people. Did you choose that? Or did they just appear in your consciousness? You think you have come here out of your will. But couldn't it be that the scenery of your consciousness has changed? You were at your home first. Now the scenery is different. That is all that has happened. But as an individual, you feel you are going here and there. But that here and there is happening without your doing. And then this, the people in our consciousness, we do a very good job of sticking labels on their foreheads. This one is this. This one is this. This one is this. And I've labeled all the people in my life, not realizing that the same energy, the same electricity which is keeping me alive is keeping the other alive. So haven't I actually labeled energy? What the hell is going on? And I want to be liked and loved and approved. Why? Because then I know I exist. This is me, the one who is liked, loved and approved and validated. The thought to be loving does not arise easily. Because the ego thinks it's a power center. My right is to receive. But your nature was to be loving. If one had the realization that consciousness is all there is, the nature of that consciousness is love. Would you really want to harm another? If you realized you all come from the same source? So simple. It's quite simple. So while this is simple, it requires a paradigm shift. Old conditioning is threatened. I mean, can you imagine right now, picture that one person before your eyes who has troubled you. And just look at that person in your mind's eye and say, my God, this person is simply an instrument through whom the divine will functions. They have been conditioned to be the way they are. Whether I like it or not is irrelevant. They are conditioned beings like I am a conditioned being. Playing out their script as per the divine script, just like I am. You will be amazed at the kind of release this understanding brings about in this rinanubandhan, the bondage of a relationship. Because for once, the opportunity arises to cut the bondage. And you absolve someone of being an instrument through whom God's will function. Yes, you may express yourself, you may respond the way you choose. You don't like what someone's doing, it doesn't mean you become a carpet to be walked all over, no doubt. But you are no longer targeting an individual. That game is up because it is seen to be false, a false narrative. I've been fooling myself all along. I can't fool myself anymore. What does the term self-realization mean? Realizing the self. Realizing the self is the self with the capital S. The one self. Not two. Not two. That is Advaita. Non-dual. Appears as two, certainly, till I'm stuck in the Maya. But not two. And this is the message which Krishna constantly hammered throughout the Gita. Constantly was catching Arjuna on his arrogance, constantly catching Duryodhan at the end on his arrogance. The whole Gita is this only. The ego deluded thinks I am the doer. I, as time, have already killed them, when he tells Arjuna. And look at your arrogance. You think you are going to do the killing. And telling Arjuna not to give him lectures on morality. You see, because Krishna was clear. He employed so much deception on the battlefield. When Jayadrath had to be killed and was not possible to kill him. And the tenet was you can't kill him after sunset. So Krishna created a circumstance where the darkness appeared earlier so that Arjuna could kill Jayadrath. And then after Jayadrath was killed, the darkness lived. Deception. So they asked him, what the hell? This is what you're doing. He said, who started it? The whole foundation of the war has been a game of dice which was not loaded in our favor, and you're telling us making Draupadi part of it. Is that dharmic? And when he fooled Dronacharya, because he could not be defeated, so Krishna was baffled. Now what do we do? And he knew Dronacharya's weak spot was his son. And so then he says, go and say Ashwatthama has died, Ashwatthama has died, which is not the truth. Then they kill an elephant, saying that was Ashwatthama. So they stuck to the truth. They didn't tell Dronacharya that. They just said Ashwatthama has died. He collapsed and they killed him. Deception. But who can question it when the ones who've started have been deceptive? So Krishna was not a fool. Why? Because the dharma had to be upheld, righteousness. But the whole Gita is about this, the false battles which we've been fighting. Because it applies to us, all the enemy camp we have in our own lives. We don't need to watch the Mahabharata. So this is the journey. Every suffering is an opportunity for growth. A challenge which comes unasked is our destiny, pleasure or pain. When it's pleasure, we don't question God. When it's pain, we question God. How convenient, you see? When things are going okay with someone, we have no problem. When they are not going okay with that person, we have a problem. And what life is constantly teaching us, this okay, not okay business needs to be annihilated. Everything is okay. Everything is okay. Just like in your deep sleep, everything is okay. Nobody complains about their deep sleep being not okay. Because in deep sleep, you don't exist. So everything is okay. In the waking state, you get polarized all the time and identified with positions, and that causes suffering. So the sage is out of this dance of duality. Pleasure one moment, pain the next, jumping from here, jumping from there, trying to escape situations, escape people, escape pains, bypass things. The sage has realized life is duality of every conceivable kind. The same person I'm condemning probably has characteristics which I don't have. And I know that the nature of life is flow, and most of that flow does not make sense. So when I stop trying to make sense of that flow, I start living life. Otherwise, I'm too left-brained, trying to make sense of people and what they say, what they do, make sense of life, make sense of what happens in life. Analytical thinking, thinking my way through the troubles of life. That is the suffering, that is the thinking mind which keeps people awake at night. They can't sleep because the mind is active. That's a tormented mind. See, the ego loves troubles because it likes to be the victim. I have so many problems in life. So many things trouble me. There's food for the ego, thrives on it. So much drama in my life. If I find I'm a very dramatic person, it means I'm in the grip of the ego. See, because the drama is engaging. We go to the movies to see drama. You know, to watch just a placid lake for 2 hours. It's not exciting. Ego loves drama. And two egos together and both love drama is life full of drama. Full on. Dhamadhal. So are we very dramatic as people? Do we use dramatic words all the time? Do we use extreme words all the time? It reveals things to us. It's a revelation that we got lost in this illusion of separation. Because equanimity, calm, composure, peace, these are qualities of the self, the awakening to the presence, to this consciousness, this pure being, the I am, is a very important moment in one's life. The realization that I am not this body and this name which I've associated with all my life. This is who I am, this is what I do, this is the family I belong to, and so on and so forth. Which is perpetuating this karmic drama. But the realization that the pure being, pure consciousness, the Sakshi Bhav, the witness consciousness, has been there all my life since the start, through all my ups and downs in life. Some birthdays I had a great time with my friends, others I was quietly sitting at home. But there's that awareness which saw it all through. Otherwise, how do I know? How can I remember what happened on my 20th birthday, 18th birthday, 30th birthday, whatever it may be? There has to be one constant which witnessed all this. Then I realized, my God, that's who I am. That pure being, pure awareness, pure consciousness is who I am. So I got reintroduced to my truth, which I forgot. I blamed a parent for running away from me. I blamed a parent for dying before their time. I blame a spouse for doing this and doing that. I blame children. Blame, 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 blame. To me, to me, to me, to me. That is the problem. That to me, as Nisargadatta Maharaj says, when that is removed, then what happens? If you just remove the to me, it's finished. He said this to me, changes to he said this, full stop. She did this to me, she did this, full stop. You see, the one who likes to acquire to me, to me, to me, when that is set aside, that is actually the beginning of the end of the karmic cycle of birth and rebirth. That is the real birth. Physical birth is one thing, but to be twice born, the dvija, to be twice born in one lifetime, is to recognize that the real birth is the birth of awareness. Our own name we have given ourselves, Homo sapiens sapiens. Man who is aware that he is aware is unaware. We are calling ourselves, man is the one who is aware that he is aware, but he is anything but aware. Yes, Hamza, would you like to add anything?
Something from the Gita which you had mentioned. So actually, you know, what it teaches us that even Duryodhan, who was supposedly the bad person and he did certain adharmic things, eventually found his place in heaven even before the Pandavas went there. So the whole drama that was enacted was to show us that that duality, the good and bad, and everything was, it was just a process. And beneath that process, there is, you know, like Krishna keeps telling Arjun through the Gita, Nishpap Arjun. Because Arjun is so plagued with the fact that he is going to kill his relatives. He's going to create a heinous crime. Because the first chapter of Vishad, which you said very rightly, the pain is a teacher. And any painful situation in life is actually there to evolve us. So he was plagued with this whole pain of Na Kamshe Vijayam Krishna, Na Jarajyam Sukhanicha. He keeps saying, he babbles. You know, the first chapter is about his babbling, his pain, his. And Krishna is the therapist who listens to him, who doesn't say anything. And, you know, he allows Arjun to purge. And Arjun is a very tough nut to crack because he's so consumed with his ego, the ego of being good or right. So he says, how will history judge me? That the person who killed his own teacher, who killed his grandfather, who killed, you know, who engaged in this war. And he was the star performer because without him, there would be no war. The Pandavas would have relegated their position and lost. So Krishna was that ideal who's just an observer. So the Sakshi Bhav, so as you rightly said, the four stages of, you know, that stage of being a Sakshi. So we are in the Jagrat state where the good and bad, the duality keeps happening. We keep judging our actions. We are very harsh with ourselves. We're not compassionate with ourselves. Because in this whole drama, as Lord Krishna says, he has already done everything. Existence has already done everything. It's only the control we have over our emotions. And that whole 17 chapters was to tell, ultimately tells Arjun, Sarva Dharma Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Means forget all your concepts, surrender to me, or surrender to yourself. And I mean, everything is, so there's this, like Sir Shankaracharya ji also said, you know, Jagat Mithyam Brahman Satyam Jagat Mithyam. So this whole thing is a mithya. It's all drama.
So
So,
true.
yeah.
And yet, Arjun chose Krishna over the Narayani Sena.
Yes,
You
yes.
see, so in spite of the ego being so strong, when he was offered the option,
Yes.
actually, there's a poetic version I read where when Krishna is asleep and Duryodhan and
Yes.
Arjun enter at the same time, so Duryodhan says it was my right to be
Yes.
offered first. But what had happened, it seems, is Duryodhan came and sat by the side of Krishna's head, whereas Arjun sat by Krishna's feet. So when Krishna opened his eyes, he saw Arjun first. So you see that surrender, actually to me, that's quite a seminal moment, because that surrender was already there. Only thing is the ego was battling. The heart had already surrendered to Krishna. Who in their right mind would choose one being over an entire army? So that's beautiful,
and
the way it begins.
Duryodhan mocked him also. Duryodhan mocked Krishna. Arjun, he says that Arjun is a fool. Yes, so he has given up the entire army and unarmed Krishna, who will not participate in the war.
Right.
So he was actually a subject of mockery also. But Arjun was very... But the unawareness came in.
Yeah.
In the battlefield, because he was so overwhelmed by this whole grand, you know, the whole scenario of the war, which was, I mean, it was like a world war.
Yeah. Fascinating.
But there's also one more theme in the Gita, which is very pertinent, as you rightly said, the balance attitude continuously. So if you see, look at the EQ, IQ, SQ, if you look at it, so Bhakti Yoga is emotional quotient. It's all about, you know, just surrendering to the feet of the Lord. Tatviti paripatena pariprasana. There's a verse in the Gita, in the Bhakti Yoga, which talks about Advesta sarva bhutana maitra karunaya vacha nirmamo nihankaraha sukha sami, which means that in any situation of pain or pleasure, which is a duality of the mind, which is not in consciousness, but it's on the mind and the ego, which is in tandem, which gives labels. This is a good situation, this is a bad situation. Like shrey and prey. This is good, this is bad. This is happiness, this is sadness. There's any situation like this, is surrender to the Lord. That is emotional balance. Same with karma yoga, social balance, and IQ, which is the intelligence quotient in Gyan Yoga. So it's all about harnessing the mind and the ego, which is working as a in a conspiracy. Yeah, that's the...
He gives talks on the Gita. I have a very august company here. Yeah. We're all stalwarts, big teachers sitting here, big therapists. We are the therapists today. All for me to learn.
So, but I don't know whether... why Duryodhan went to heaven, if that is, I have never heard of it, read anywhere in the scripture where he has gone to heaven or something, but that negates everything then. What it means is that you do any samskara coming here and nothing happens to you.
Who then, said nothing happens to you?
So if you are going to heaven, then how is it, there is nothing happening to you, then why do you choose dharma?
Krishna had told Duryodhan that you have been such an exemplary warrior, perfected the craft, that's a great thing. So, like I said, everyone has their pluses and minuses, but we all accountable for actions. All actions have consequences. That is the law. We try to solve things in the courts of law on the physical plane, but there's a divine law operating. Actually, you may feel that you won and lost a case. That is on the physical plane. The truth is something else. Who are we to question the laws? And heaven is not a place. Hell is the ego. There's no place called heaven. Heaven is right here, right now. It's a state of consciousness, you could say. And there are then planes, levels. The point is, how many action-reaction loops are we stuck in during the day, which we are perpetuating all the time, creating karma, fresh karma, fresh karma, fresh karma. So Eckhart Tolle was quite right. Forget about reincarnation in terms of multiple births. You are reincarnating in the same day so many times. When you are reincarnating into the same thought patterns again and again and again, that is itself reincarnation. Reincarnate. It's perpetuating the me. The story of the me is being perpetuated hundreds of times in the same day. Rebirth and all is too far to think about. When will this reincarnation stop? When the ego is sacrificed at the altar of truth, the crucifixion and the resurrection. The crucifixion is a clear symbol of horizontal time, past and future. And the resurrection is vertical time, here and now. So every time We are in the present moment when our thinking mind is not invested heavily in the dead past or an imaginary future. We are in heaven. And every time we are invested in the past and future, we are in hell. So simple. The masters who have been known for the biggest miracles would have only performed those miracles if they were living embodiments of the absolute. So this garbage which is in our consciousness throughout the day, this voice in our head, what Eckhart refers to, this constant thing telling us, whispering things into our ear, when that dies down, then I am able to meet the other person in pure presence, in pure being, not based on my historical data. Otherwise, I'm projecting from the past all the time. Images from the past, 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 past. I'm just recreating the past. My whole future is a recreation of the past. How much time do you have? The movie is running out. No matter how old you are, the number of breaths is predetermined. The minute you've started, you've stopped. Ego doesn't like hearing all these things. So many times I get mails, we saw your videos 3 years ago and said it's the worst talk we've seen and now we can't help but look at them again. Because life teaches lessons. Ego resists. I can't be that helpless. I have full power. You do have full power, but not as the ego. The nature of the I am is all powerful, all knowing, all pervading, all loving. But the ego has mistaken that to be for itself. I received a mail from someone young who had a full-blown awakening, and with that came all the siddhis at a young age in his 20s. Everything. Healing people, clairvoyance, this, that and all. But luckily for him, the ego didn't get swayed and carried away. He kept telling himself, this too shall pass, this too shall pass, this is just an experience. And then he got stabilized into an awakened state, not chasing experiences. And then not only did those experiences not matter, they went. Because that's the nature of life. You have friends who come into your life and go from your life. That's the life's nature, but you want to hold. I want to hold on to certain friendships, they make me feel good. I want to hold on to certain family members, I can't do without them. I just want to hold because I want to feel safe and secure. When your whole foundation is so shaky, so transient, so temporary, what are you finding security in? No, no, I must survive. I must have this nicely set up around me. So if that goes wrong, I have this backup. I have this. What a precarious way to live. Walking on eggshells all the time. Is that life worth living? But to be ready to face, knowing that life is transience, it is a flow. And as Ramana Maharshi says, let what comes come, let what goes go. So simple. But to honor that being, that pure being. Because even when I'm depressed, I know I'm depressed. Who knows I'm depressed? But then ego has taken ownership of the depression. You see, this fire of knowledge starts burning up these old concepts, ways of thinking. It has a way of humbling one. I went to my guru for 10 years. I took a friend of mine, I think he went only once or twice. And he got it. Met up with him a couple of months ago. He said there's only one statement which stayed in my mind. Because I told Ramesh, it doesn't make sense what you're saying. I'm in full charge, in full control. And he said, Ramesh said, you know, imagine you are one cell out of the billions of cells in your body, or in your brain, forget your body. Each cell does not know what the other cell is doing, but they work in perfect unison to bring about what is meant to be brought about. So that is how irrelevant you are, and that is how important you are. Yet, is the functioning of your body in your control as that one cell? He said, for him, the moment he heard that, life was finished. Any situation which comes up, he sees that to overanalyze it is absolutely irrelevant. He got it. Yet, he has to face life. He has to go through his challenges. He is going through his challenges. Severe relationship issues with family members, which I think most of us in this room would not swap our places for. So that is the script which is written. It is unavoidable. But to accept and have an attitude to know there's only this much I can do. I have saved myself from a mountain of psychological suffering. Suffering is my lot till it is destined. But that heap of psychological suffering I have saved myself from. It's a big thing.
I remember Ramesh Ji's lecture on the doership. He said everyone feels that he is the doer. It is like everyone has a currency, but you don't know that it's a fake currency.
Yeah.
But about the question about Duryodhan, I just wanted to mention that today, again, going by what Ramesh Ji says and what, you know, we have no control, Duryodhan was also a victim of circumstances. So actually, if you look at the pure Mahabharata, he was deprived of his kingship. His father was deprived because he was a blind king. So the younger brother became the king. So the Mahabharata has a lot of subtext. Everyone is a victim and everyone is a hero. Karna, Duryodhan, Bhishma, everyone has also been villainous. Although we don't revile them because Bhishma and Karna is put on the pedestal. But each one had shades. There's nobody absolutely, and everybody's playing a role. So I always mention this, that in the Bible, actually Judas is the hero.
Yes.
Because if Judas was not there, there was no crucifixion. If there was no crucifixion, there would be no Christianity. And similarly, in the Ramayana, Kaiki was the hero. Because if Kaiki had not prevailed on Dashrath to banish Ram, there would be no killing of Ravan and the mukti of Jaya and Vijaya, you know, Kumbhakarna and Raman. So we label people. So Duryodhan was also a very honorable king. When he became the king, not a king, but he was a crown prince and he ruled Hastinapur, he was supposed to be very fair, very good, and people praised his leadership. But he had the ego, and he didn't want to, he was very insecure, because, and he didn't ever acknowledge that Yudhishthira was the older than him, and he was a legitimate son of Pandu. So he was also a victim.
You know, I've mentioned this before, Hamza, the point you mentioned. I've befriended someone who is the star disciple of a Sufi mystic in Kashmir. Lovely boy. He is about 30, 32. He is a father of two children. And he went through a severe health crisis as a result of his association with someone. And another health situation came up where his sister was brutalized in her marriage. Now this guy, gym going, bodybuilding, tough as nails, wanted to take revenge. So first he went to his guru. In their system, they call them Peer Sahab. She said, "What are you doing? Is this what I've taught you?" So the nature was to take revenge. She said, "Firstly, calm down. You want to go today, go after 5 days. Because the quality will change." And she said, "My teaching has been based, most Sufi teachings are based on love." She said, "Before you go there, you, no matter how hard it is, think one loving thought about that person you are so upset about." So that is their sadhana. But the point being, as you rightly said, everyone has shades. But we focus on those shades for our convenience where we want to focus on. You see, that's the problem. We are, all these characters are within us. So our focus shifts based on our survival and our identification. When that is threatened, we focus on that person's dark shade. When that is not threatened, you're an amazing person. You're so kind, so loved. Because I'm not threatened. That is what we do. All the villains and heroes are inside.
So, sir, as just wanted to summarize from a relatable point of view, so that I could use it in my daily life, what I understand from today is that whoever I come across in my life, right, whoever I have, is sent through divine will, right? And if they are instigating something in me or it's causing any pain or suffering, it's my learning. And also, while being on earth, I know that I can choose to disengage or draw my boundaries. If I can't, then I need to respond from the aspect that this person has come for some higher purpose to help me evolve. Is that so? Then in that case,
everything is a higher purpose.
So then in that case, so all this now, why don't, how do, does one attract a healthy relationship then?
But if you're not the doer, you can't attract a healthy relationship, nor can you attract an unhealthy relationship. It is the play of karma.
So then Rinanubandhan. So then what about healthy relationships? Or?
What about
them? We want healthy relationships.
But don't
also
you have some healthy relationships in your life?
Yeah, a little only.
No.
Would like more.
The problem is you want all relationships to be healthy. Is your relationship with yourself healthy or unhealthy?
I'm navigating through that, trying to make it healthy.
Yes, that is the honest truth.
No, but I'm being
because
honest.
Because for most of us, our relationship with ourselves is I'm an learning. Unhealthy one.
I'm learning too.
Yes.
Yeah, make it healthy.
And that is all. We have to just focus on that.
Okay.
For example, am I too hard on myself? I have a certain quality which I know is not a nice quality. Am I blaming myself for it, or do I accept I didn't create this quality, my conditioning did? I said some words which I didn't mean to. I hate myself for that. But if you didn't mean to say them and they came out, are you the doer? So we're very hard on ourselves. First is to establish a healthy relationship with ourselves. Do we see that what we do, say and think is based on our conditioning which God made? Our nature which God made? If I am too shy and timid, am I blaming myself? Oh, I can't survive in this world. God made me shy and timid, gave me a set of characteristics, made me who I am. So when I start accepting myself for who I am, I start accepting others for who they are, as within, so without. That is the truth. When I accept my good points and my bad points, I become more comfortable with myself. And therefore, I become more comfortable with others, with their good points and bad points. It's really very simple. When that happens, the Rinanubandhan is resolved. This is a core concept of the teaching, Rinanubandhan. Sai Baba's whole life was about Rinanubandhan and pointing out to people their past associations, pointing out between animals their past generational associations, because he had that vision. There is that story about that woman who took care of her siblings when they were young because the parents passed away. And as she grew old, she was very upset because the siblings were not taking care of her now that she was ailing. She thought it was her right. But if the Rinanubandhan is not there, it's not there. They didn't take care of her. But her grouse was, they should have. It was their duty. That is in your head. When the Rinanubandhan is not there, it's not going to happen. You can't force someone to take care of you. You see, so this key point, this question you've asked is a very honest question. But first step is accept myself totally the way God created me. Look at all the points of my personality which I judge myself. List them if you have to, list them down. And release yourself from these chains. One by one. Yes, certain aspects of personality have consequences. If you're an angry person, you're going to have consequences of that anger. You're not absolved of it. But did you choose to be angry? Or did circumstance make you that way? Now there's a potential, a possibility for change. When there's no resistance, then the potential is there for change. So it is a journey. A relationship with others is a reflection of our relationship with ourselves. Yes, there will be people in our lives who we'd rather not have. But you will find a surprising change. You will still wish them well in your mind and in your heart. You will not harbor hate towards them. These changes start happening. That, you know, you have your own challenges to deal with. God be with you. But in this incarnation, all I can do is absolve myself of this relationship. I can't be with your energy field, your presence anymore, if I have that choice, but God be with. That is why a key point in Goldsmith's teachings was, when he was going through his awakening, he said that it, no matter what awakening he has had, it was not possible for me to love everyone. There were certain people in my life I could not get myself to love. And at that instant, he said, the thought came, dear God, since I can't love them,
You love them through me. So he relinquished that position. I've tried my best. Now it's your job. We all want 99% healthy relationships and 1% unhealthy. See, that 1% is important, otherwise we wouldn't know about 99 being healthy. Isn't it? But most of us are 50, 50, 40, 60, 30, 70, 20, 80, 10, 90, because to have more unhealthy relationships means to have an unhealthy relationship with God, because God created everyone. It has to be looked into. If you offend most of the people in your life, if you are upset by most of the people in your life, then you have a problem about your relationship with God, isn't it? God not as a mighty being up there, but as consciousness, the source, all there is, the Almighty. So you better do the math for yourself. 20 family members, 10 okay, 10 not okay. I'm fine. Really? Is that so? It's amazing. Is it a bit hot or am I feeling hot now?
Very.
Y'all are okay?
Hi Gautam. I have a question about parenting.
A little louder, please.
I have a question about parenting. So my son is a very happy-go-lucky, chill, you know, boy. And I love that about him, honestly. But I think he needs to get a little more serious about his academics. And so as a mother, I have this dilemma that should I hammer him to become serious or should I just let him be the way he is? Because if I let him be, then I'm not sure. If I hammer him too much, I don't want to condition him too much. How do I deal with that?
What a word you're using, hammer him. Bichara. Oh, bichara, yeah. If my mom said, should I hammer him or not, I think I would have collapsed there and there.
No, hammer meaning, you know.
No, I get your point. I'm just joking. See, this was something very beautiful my guru said once. He said, parents, first of all, look, parents are the first gurus of the child. They are the teachers because the child knows nothing. It's a very important role. And parents want to do their best for the child. But he said, parents need to realize that children come with their own destiny. What parents tend to do, thinking they are doing it out of love, is force what they think is the right destiny for the child. That is the mistake. That, in fact, is a form of violence. So you see, I'm not a parent, so I'm not qualified to answer this question the way he answered it, because he had 3 children. But I found that was very sage advice. And I have found in many cases where children are left alone to bloom with a kind of background guidance, they really bloom. But when they are forced to fit into a certain box or conditioned pattern or destiny, that is when they rebel. And today's children are tough. Today's children have a very tough situation, ADD, fragmentation, and a very hard communal geopolitical environment which is on currently. Make no mistake. So you have to do what you think is right. But don't do it to the point of ad nauseum, where it's nauseating that you're telling the child the same thing 100 times. Forget children, we tell adults the same thing again and again. Actually, we are telling it to ourselves only. But we have this habit, telling the same thing again and again to a person. There's no need. Life will go on without you, whether you believe it or not. When my father died and my mother sat in the office chair, housewife having 0 experience, she didn't know what to do. From her point of view, she said, I told Shiva, you've got me into this mess, now you get me out of it. But our auditor, he told her one thing. He said, look, your husband died, but whether this advertising agency survives or not is a separate issue, because nobody is indispensable. Nobody is indispensable, and that agency survived for the next 15 years. And this became my mantra when I was a teenager. Nobody is indispensable, especially me. Life really does not need you. It will be lived. So not to force too much upon children, too much upon partners, too much upon parents, too much upon friends. It's okay. As it is, people have their lot to deal with. They don't need to deal with your additional baggage. Enough. Yes, you want to share, you feel for someone, say it once, say it twice, let go of it. Not necessary to do more than that. I always point to a few books here, not mine because that would not be right. Your Soul's Plan is written by Robert Schwartz, who I think has done amazing work. He's written three books we've published, where he has regressed patients to the pre-birth stage, not the past life, the pre-birth stage. And he has taken case studies, traumatic, alcoholism, HIV, terrorism victim, and reversed him to the or her to the pre-birth stage and revealed that at that stage, not only is that event predetermined, but all the people around this person, like the caregivers of the alcoholic, what role they will play, what they have to learn, is all decided in advance. So if this topic interests you, when I read it 15, 20 years ago, I found it reaffirming what I thought was going on here. And the other is a relatively new book called When You Die. It is about someone who's attended our retreats and he has fictionalized it, but he actually developed this ability to see what happens at the moment of death and the tunnel of light and how he worked with people with suicidal endings, animals, other people, and the kind of revelation he has brought about, he has explained in his book. So it is probably not everyone's cup of tea, but I feel anyone on the spiritual path should start reading these kind of books because it opens up things. And one more book is Joel Goldsmith's book, The Infinite Way, which we've also just published. That is his best-selling book. And why I did that is because one of my favorites, as you all know, is Eckhart Tolle. And Eckhart highly revered Joel Goldsmith because Eckhart is as fond of the teachings of Jesus as Goldsmith was. So The Infinite Way is what people are most familiar with who followed that American master at that time. But I find it is pure Advaita because his one sentence, give up the belief in two powers, is pure Advaita. There is no good and bad. Give up this belief in two powers, which is all there is consciousness. Couldn't be closer. So it's fascinating. I would say be happy. Be happy that you're on a spiritual journey because it really is. You make new discoveries. Just, you know, you discover new places within your own consciousness. It doesn't have to be so sad and tragic and morose. It's you really awakening to this one being, this new way of looking at life, looking at people, looking at challenges. It's quite exhilarating in a way. So it's not this, oh God, ye kya ho gaya? Now we have to think, nobody is the doer of their actions. It's not that. It's freeing you. It's really freeing you up from all the chains you have bound yourself in and others in. Yes, it takes away the joy of blaming and condemning. That it does, because that is very thrilling. Amazing. The light shineth in the darkness. Darkness comprehendeth.